All right, it's that time. We talk to our guy, Hembo, segment producer, Get Up on ESPN. Hembo, good to have you.
What's up, guys? I've got some really good numbers cooked up for you today. This is a fun one.
Stew cooked up. Hey, can I ask? All right, so and following sports and watching sports and covering sports and all that over the last couple of decades, I feel like the home team wins at at least a 60-65% clip. I mean, and then in the postseason, it should go even higher. Now, baseball's a funny deal, right? I mean, it's pitchers dictate everything, but what's your big takeaway from the series outside of the obvious, which is the road team's winning?
That was certainly bizarre, but what most surprised me in looking this up retroactively was that the Nationals entered the series plus 195 the underdog. That made them the third largest underdog in the history of the World Series that won it. It's the third largest upset in World Series history.
And only 2-1?
Yeah, plus 195. That's what's surprising, because I went and looked back, and like the odds makers over the course of time have not really strayed away from like really tight lines historically. It really surprised me. 100 years ago, that famous World Series in 1919, you know, the heavily favored White Sox and all.
Yes.
The Astros were a more significant favorite this year than the White Sox were 100 years ago, and they threw the damn thing.
That is amazing. That is some good stuff. They weren't getting very good value on throwing. I mean, that's unreal.
I know. But in watching that series, I don't think anyone would have thought that. Like, this is the third largest upset in the history of the World Series that dates to 1903. So when you consider how far this team came, obviously, from their 50-game start, it really makes this one of the biggest underdog stories in the history of the sport. It didn't really feel like that in watching it, but the numbers bear it out.
Well, another underdog that is desperately in need of a win are the Cleveland Browns. Maybe they haven't been the most disciplined team this year. A lot of penalties, a lot of turnovers. What do you have for us with that?
I love this note, Bobby. The 2019 Browns are on pace to be the most penalized team in recorded history, and they've been especially undisciplined on offense early and down in distance. Cleveland's average distance to gain on second down this season is 9.6 yards, the highest mark by any team since we began tracking in 2001. That's how undisciplined. Second and 10. Their average is second and 10.
That's
that
terrible.
Is excruciating. Like, if you're giving up a 33% of your offensive chances with how undisciplined you are early, and they're not even ineffective on first down in terms of on a per-play basis, it's these penalties that are really costing them, and look, obviously, it's making a considerable difference.
Listen, they're so penalized, the coach is doing it intentionally. I mean, they're not, and you're not even including the ones where the coach says, go ahead and take a false start on purpose. I'd prefer to be in 4th and 16 than 4th and 11.
They're averaging 13 penalties a game. 13 penalty games. It's never happened before. Obviously, look, we've talked about this before. The head coach is clearly showing his inexperience, but you'd think over the course of time this thing would modify itself, but it's not. They've averaged more yards per play than their opponent in each of the last two games. And good teams, the Patriots and the Seahawks, and they've managed to lose both of them. They're playing well, but these little things have obviously caught up with them, and now they're obviously, you know, in a situation where they're trailing these teams in their division just because of the nature of the way they play.
Yeah, they're giving up so many yards and penalties. Now, I can't tell you if all those penalties they're averaging are legit. I'm sure some of them aren't, but you're right. I mean, it's a bad deal for them, and now they're kind of in a must situation. Certainly they're in a must situation when they go to Denver. Bobby and I both kind of lean towards the Ravens this week, and I can't give you a great reason why, other than the fact that I think Baltimore is a good team, and they're at home, and I also feel like the Patriot running game is very hit and miss, although it's Lamar against that defense is going to be big. And I guess that's when I ask like former NFL guys, like, who has the best defense, it is the Patriots. But I don't know if anyone's willing to go all in yet on that they're historically great. Are they?
Well, right now they're on pace to be an all-timer, but they do struggle in one area that Lamar Jackson thrives. That, of course, is his scrambling. New England allows 8.2 yards per rush on quarterback scramble. Jackson averages 10.5 yards on scramble attempts. He averages 4.5 yards on his designed rush attempts, and that's what makes him just so dangerous. They're averaging more than 200 yards a game on the ground because you have to game plan for two things. I mean, he's really effective when they design it, and he's even more effective when the play breaks down. So I don't exactly know how the Patriots are going to plan to spy on him, but there's been some quarterbacks in the past that have had pretty good luck, mobile quarterbacks in the past that have had pretty good luck against Bill Belichick and that defense.
And you're so digging that up. The Patriots haven't allowed a ton of scrambles, but they play so much man, him, but when they let him get out, there's not usually anybody there to quickly provide an answer and get the quarterback to the ground. So
yes, we're only talking about a couple of game there, but for Lamar Jackson, if there's a couple of those pop, that might be all the difference that they need in a game that you guys both expect to be pretty close, it sounds like.
The other part of this is, and I don't know if this would be a complete deeper dive for you, is that the quarterbacks that they have played all this year, I don't think you're that fearful of them beating you with the pass. So, So it's an easier quarterback to defend, and maybe the only thing available is that that guy gets flush and he gets a few yards on him. Because they have not faced great quarterbacks this year.
And they've all been seemingly young quarterbacks, yeah. And that's something that's sort of an underrated dynamic here. Bill Belichick historically just destroys young quarterbacks, and two-thirds of the league now are quarterbacks 27 or under. This is just an opportunity for maybe his best defense ever to feast on in an area that he has historically done well against, so it's sort of a double whammy for opponents.
The Bears can't seem to get anything going offensively, we know that, but they could be helped by their defense at times. Is the defense tiring now? Is this too heavy of a lift for them? Or have you seen something in the Bear defense that has been exploited?
There's one thing, and I'm dying to hear Bobby's answer as to why. The struggles of the Bears' offense, like you said, well-documented. But the defense has regressed considerably in one area that I expect the Eagles will exploit on Sunday, and that's in the play-action passing game. Get a load of this. Bears' opponents are 44 for 51. That's good for a completion percentage of 86 on play-action attempts this season. That's the highest rate in the league. They had the second lowest rate in the league a season ago. Bobby, what in the world would you attribute that kind of regression in this area? Because this was a really disciplined unit last season.
It was, and the roster's really the same, and you go and look, is it because they're giving up a lot of rushing yards? I mean, I don't think that's the case, and so you try to figure that out. Like, yeah, the Bears, their rush defense, so they're giving up 86 yards a game on the ground, so I don't know why they would feel the need to overcommit unless maybe they're just trying to make too many plays in the run game. Guys are pulling up, and you feel like you're trying to create turnovers, and then in turn, you know, giving up some plays behind you.
That number does tell me that they're selling out, but, and you also mentioned it, they're also on the field a lot more than they were last year, because they don't control the clock at all, because everything that Mitchell Trubisky is throwing is ending up three rows up the side. Like, he has more overthrows this year than 15-yard completions. Like, he has regressed considerably himself as a passer. So with them not being able to control the clock the way they did a year ago, the defense obviously, it loses a lot of its shine.
So before we let you go, Hembo, we talked about the Pats defense being historic. The Niners, though, I think they're finally starting to garner some attention. Their defense is fantastic. What makes them so good, and how are they thriving?
Well, they do one thing better than any unit in the NFL by a long shot. They apply the most effective pressure on defense. When pressured, their opponents have averaged only 2.5 yards per pass attempt, with a sack rate of nearly 40%, both of those by far the highest rate in the league. And that doesn't bode well for Kyler Murray tonight. 41 of his dropbacks this season have ended in a sack or a throwaway. Most of the NFL, before I let you guys go, I had no idea. Look, I watched Nick Bosa play a little bit in college. I had no idea he was this kind of good.
Well, he didn't really play much last year, so I think that's probably why people were underestimating. But he's basically, you know, his brother 2.0, so he's done a heck of a job. But we appreciate the nuggets there and look forward to seeing you tomorrow on the set.
Awesome, man. Later, boys.
Thanks, Hembo.